Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook VIP podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. It is emotional month, and today we have on the line Ken Koshta. How you doing, Ken?
Hey, doing great. I am stoked to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show. For the listeners, could you give a brief overview of who you are and what you do?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I'm honored to be here. I am a life booker myself. I had the pleasure to take it with Sandra at the, as you call it, the Brown Cocoon back in 2011. And so it was a really good compliment and still very much a part of my life book with that. And I got my start in 2019. So basically now for 47 years, I'm the lead trainer and the international training director for the Silver Method. And it's a program that started in 66, and it's a human development program. It's a mind-body-spirit program teaching people how to take command of their lives from the inside out, you know, how to reframe, how to make changes internally. And we're also big on intuition and creativity and learning how to recognize and activate it and trust it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a privilege and a joy and a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I found it so way back. I was 19.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the Silva Method's always been super interesting to me. But today we're going to be talking about emotions. We're going to be talking about inner conflict. I just watched a great YouTube video that you put up about inner conflict. And we will direct the listeners to your work in a little bit here. But for now, talk to me about what role you think emotions play in our lives and why they're important. Because they're there to tell us things, but oftentimes it's like two separate beings. Like your emotions are doing things to you. They're not part of you. They're either making you happy or keeping you down or whatever it is. Talk to me a little bit about that.
This is perfect. One of the things that I have appreciated about Lifebook is we look at all the different categories.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're weak in one category, it affects the whole Megillah,
right,
so to speak, and our life vision. So I would say, why this is so important, emotions. I mean, I'm also a student and research and done a lot of work and collaborated with people who do this work with emotional intelligence. Our emotions run our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So in the instance of fellow VIPs who are interested in bringing out their best self, excellence, high performance, however we want to call it, or even just achieving balance in life and, you know, in our life vision, emotions really run the gamut because it begins with the catalyst of a thought, and the thoughts trigger our feelings, our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So the science piece, which I think is important, I mean, at least I like to be science-based when I can, is our emotions cause the brain to release neurochemicals, those neuropeptides, which are the chemical messengers of the body. So, Jordan, what's so cool, if you watch, it affects the tone of your voice. You know, when the emotions trigger your physiology, they affect your posture,
mm-hmm.
how you're standing, whether you have aches and pains, whether you're feeling good, whether you have high energy or low energy. So whether someone is an artist, a musician, a singer, a salesperson, building a business, dealing with people, if we don't have a handle on our emotions and we get caught up in other people's melodrama or our own melodrama, and we're repressing it, hiding it, or ignoring them, then the danger is, without even realizing it, it could be very subtle nuances from your face. I mean, the people who are good at reading faces, it affects your eyes, how
mm-hmm.
you look.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all had that. You know, I don't know what's up with him. And people don't know. And a lot of people don't take the time to figure that out. So, you know, we all have challenges and upsets. And it's important to not ignore them, but to learn how to manage them in a way that it supports us, and we can still bring out our best for our family, our loved ones, people we work with, our clients. I mean, I could go on and on. I won't, but I think everybody gets the point.
Right. Well, sometimes it kind of seems like emotions are happening to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes it does. But it's interesting you said that. But I think anyone who's studied Lifebook and done something with it realizes, you know, when it seems like we're not victims, and by the fact that we invest the time, the energy, and everything that it takes in studying and reading, tells us, you know, we're learning how to take control, take command,
mm-hmm.
or take con- command of our lives.
Exactly.
And you need skill. You know, it's not enough to, by the way, I'm a great believer in creative visualization. I've been meditating all these years, 47 years. But this is one of the challenges I have with people. I've worked with a couple hundred thousand people. I certify our team globally. And the big challenge is people sit back and although it's healthy and important to meditate and center yourself and then to visualize, by itself, it's not enough. You got to have a strategy. You got to have a plan. Mm-hmm. And then you got to implement and take action on that plan. So, you know, there's a whole balance, which why I feel so honored to be here, because Lifebook talks about that balance. Lifebook teaches people how to achieve that balance in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anyway, that's the kind of the two sides. It's kind of like the right brain and the left brain. It's your mental state and then also your physical plan and actual capability. You know what I mean? It's kind of left brain, right brain sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's interesting you said that because back like in the 80s when Robert Ornstein and others received the Nobel Prize, I believe it was in the Medical Science, I don't remember, but for their work in right brain, left brain.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know it's really a metaphor that what's important is the bicameral or the whole brain. And that so each plays a part. One by itself is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, I thought of something with this. When you think about the role emotions play, they run our physiology. It affects our health, our performance, our behavior. So there's a process that I've called in my silver classes of manifestation, or better yet, a process of how we can co-create. It's just simple four steps. It begins with a thought. So the thought is like a light switch, the catalyst to feeling what we feel, and those feelings will trigger our emotions, which is the key. Like, for example, we all know that in the early days, affirmations were a big deal. Mm-hmm. But affirmations in a state of elevated emotions is necessary in order to integrate, to make them a part. But those feelings then affect our physiology, which affects our performance, which affects the result. So what you said about this right brain, left brain with this, you know, it's really a balancing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I'm preparing, thinking about today being with you, there's something, if we were on video, I would demonstrate it. And if we were live, I'd really demonstrate it. But I've done this. If you take a bottle of seltzer or a bottle of club soda,
mm-hmm.
and better to get a cheap bottle, you know, an inexpensive brand, because it's so freaking gassy. And if you hold that bottle up, and just imagine this as a sample, we move through life. So guys are taught, at least I was, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Come on now, you know, you're a man. Man up now. And you know, real men don't cry.
Suck it up.
Right. Suck it up. I had a cousin, my first cousin, who I'm not going to go into detail, but it was a horrific death and really tragic. And I was a young teenager. And the guys, the men were hugging me and patting me on the back because I wasn't crying and I was so stiff. And what they didn't realize was I was bottling it up. It's like shaking the bottle of seltzer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And 2 days later, after, you know, the funeral and everything, I was sick as a dog because I had internalized it. So the point is, you know, we suck it up and, you know, although I say, and then we go through and people say, oh, man up, it's okay. You know, just ignore it. And it's like shaking the bottle. And every time we shake the bottle, we're repressing an energy, and that energy has to go somewhere. And that's why it's the leading cause of ill health, aches mm-hmm. and pains in the body,
mm-hmm.
by not managing our emotion. So we don't want to repress them. We want to stay in emotional integrity, honor and embrace our struggle, honor and or embrace the conflict. And we'll labor as we're going to the questions, some tools we can use for that, mm-hmm. but not swallow in it, not make it worse, not worry about it.
Right.
You know,
absorb it. If you absorb that negativity, that's when it starts to really sink into you and affect your body.
Yeah, same thing with grief. It's okay to be upset and to grieve, whether it takes you 10 years to get over it or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we live in a culture that says, well, come on, life is moving on. The universe keeps spinning. You know, get over it already. Well, I don't agree with that. And actually, it's not even it's an opinion based on what we know in science, whether
right.
it be neuropsychology, et cetera.
Well, let's talk about when we don't have that inner integrity with our emotions. How would you define inner emotional conflict?
But I would also say I'm not a psychologist, and I don't pretend to be. I'm just very well versed, mm-hmm. and I work with them. So just let, you know, be clear about that. So I'm going to reframe the question. How can you tell, why is it that people, some people are dogging it in their lives, whether it be their business, whether it be their relationship, you know, in any aspect of their life? And one of the things to watch out for, which is that we're in conflict inside or we're out of emotional integrity,
mm-hmm.
when we begin to dread what we have to do.
Right.
You know, the details. And so we have trouble getting up in the morning. We get up in the morning and say, oh, sugar, I gotta go back there. Or
right,
we begin dreading having that conversation with you know who. And our motivation, which affects motivation, and our energy begins to drop. And this is a result of the stress hormones building up and not being managed, not being, you know, released. Or we have another symptom would be sleepless nights,
mm-hmm.
either difficulty getting to sleep or staying asleep, or our dreams. I don't know if you, Jordan, if you ever work on remembering your dreams, but it's a part of my life now. I never used to. Some of them are very entertaining and fun.
Yeah, no, dream work is really becoming popular now, and my brother-in-law is really into it. It's fascinating stuff, the work that people are doing and the methods that people use to try to dream vividly, remember their dreams, and it's just this dream work. It's like exercising, but with your dreaming mind. I find it very fascinating.
Yeah, me too. I was first introduced to 71 through the Silver Method because it's a tool we use, how do you put your subconscious to work while you're sleeping, you know, and having a dream.
Mm.
Sometimes I wake up and full disclosure here, and I say, oh God, what the heck is going on? It's like a window to your soul. Meaning, if you think you have forgiven someone and you're done and you're okay, and it keeps showing up in your dreams of this person, that's clearly telling you, buddy, you got more work to do.
Right. Yeah.
And so those are some of the signs that I've noticed, or sometimes it's subtle, but sometimes it may be obvious and you just feel uncomfortable in your stomach.
Yeah, people know the feeling you're talking about. It's like it's kind of like a wet blanket. It kind of weighs on you, and it's almost like a monkey on your back.
Exactly, it is. And just as a quick example, since you often are talking in these interviews with John, as in, you know, John Butcher, for that, my son, our eldest, who's 36 now. He traveled the world doing some work, and he said, I want to make some serious money. So he got a job, long story short, in sales with a big, I can't mention the name, elevator company from Europe, and he was selling service contracts. And he started making more serious money. He was up to like about $150K a year,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't even like sales, and he doesn't think of himself as a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And he became their top producer. But then all of a sudden, in his example, he was dreading it. He was having difficulty. He found himself in like a really negative space.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, what's up? Because they were contracts, right? Agreements. And the company literally was not living up to the agreement. They were lying. They were making changes. And it was really upsetting to his customers. And he spent so much time trying to smooth it over. He said, how can I deal with this? They're lying. You know, he was out of integrity.
Right.
So he just said, screw this, and he left. And, you know, I'm not a quitter myself. I'm one of working it out. But under those conditions, it was way beyond his control. And I think that was a smart move because sometimes we find ourselves in situations like that.
Exactly. Well, other than just skipping out, obviously in a situation like that, it's good to realize that and then separate yourself from the situation. But sometimes it's not always that cut and dry. How do we stay true to ourselves while trying to manage these emotions? You know, when we're in that inner conflict, sometimes it's hard to see the truth. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. In fact, I think of myself as the how-to guy. I guess that's why I resonate, though I do a lot of things and modalities, why I resonate with Silva, because it's a very simple step-by-step. So here's some ideas. First step is, I would say, we all need to be self-aware enough to recognize that conflict is okay. conflict, if you're in relationship with somebody, if you're living with someone, let alone the people we deal with, you're bound to have some disagreements or some conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem. It's great. It shows that, you know, we're alive and we're interacting. It's how we manage it that becomes either a problem. The first step is to recognize it's inevitable conflict, and it's okay. It's like that seltzer bottle. We just need to release some of that repressed energy in a manageable way, in a way that we can. So we can manage the emotional state in a variety of ways. Would it be okay? I'll go into a couple of things.
Please, yes, share.
First step is just think of it as a four steps. In the same way in Life Book, you know, we have the four steps from premise to vision to, you know, your big why, and then the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Something kind of along those lines is that first step is life happens. And we all know the big S happens in our lives. And and I think maybe for the purpose of the recording, I'll just say stuff.
Sure. Yeah, stuff happens. Exactly.
Right. And some of it is within our control, right? And a lot of it is not, which is going to lead to these other questions momentarily. So first step is to recognize that. Second thing is the point of power. In psychology, we call it the point of power, and that is the perspective, the viewpoint, the interpretation of that life event, and how we internalize it.
Uh-huh.
So as a simple example, here living in New England, you know, when it snows, young children say, yay, they're jumping for joy. No school today.
Right.
In fact, even some teachers are like that. But for the doctor who's got a rain, snow, sleet, or sail, travel through to get to the OR early in the morning, it's like, oh, God.
Right.
You know, please don't snow. So that perspective, that point of power, you know, I think you've met, there are more business people I've met who become very successful, and they went bankrupt. I have a good friend of mine who went bankrupt 2 times before he developed a multi-million-dollar company,
mm-hmm.
you know, and work with it. So the perspective, the point of power, the shifting it. So we need to manage that, the inner dialogue. We need to manage the way we look at ourselves. And it's inevitable to screw up, isn't it, for people?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not too often, but we do.
Exactly, yeah.
So before I go a little bit more into managing the inner dialogue, why it's important is because the perspective we have will influence whether we are optimistic or pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
If we go pessimistic, we run the risk of becoming indifferent and say, screw this, you can't fight City Hall, why bother? And then people sit on the sidelines and they don't even show up. They don't even get in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if somebody has optimism, and I don't mean the blind Pollyanna kind of optimism, the kind of optimism that gives us the faith that somehow, some way, I can figure this out. And I know I need some help, so I'm going to ask for help. Or maybe I need more training, or I need to read a book, or I need to hire a coach, or whatever it is, or get a team, or get it my own way. But when we have optimism, when we're hopeful, when we have faith in us, we're more likely to take action and do something, which, of course, all of the attitude then affects our behavior, what we do or don't, which affects the results we get. And so I find that one of the keys is to manage the inner dialogue,
mm-hmm.
is to manage our life's experience and how we look at it, you know, by being truthful, by accepting it, embracing the struggle, identifying it, and then just not making it any worse. Once we've identified it, we don't want to give too much, in my work, there's an expression, whatever you give attention to, you give energy to, and whatever you give energy to will grow and multiply.
Mm-hmm.
So once we identify a problem or a challenge or a difficulty, then we need to start asking, okay, how do I turn it around? What steps
right.
can I take to correct it? And I know you know this, and fellow life bookers, especially VIPs, employ that. There's another aspect of that. If I may go into it.
Sure.
You're okay
yes.
with that?
Of course.
That is, it's the act of, we need to give ourselves permission not to be perfect. We need to give and I don't mean make an excuse and say, well, I'm not perfect. So no. for example, in the morning, a tool, here's a good takeaway. You're sitting reflecting, whether you're meditating, whether you're just closing your eyes, whether you're listening to some really good music that soothes you and gets you into a state, or maybe you're doing some stretching. And then to do some creative visualization of positive outcomes for the day. So if you have a business meeting, or you're doing some sales, or you're giving a presentation, or you're going to be with your honey, you know, you're imagining you're bringing your best self in all that you do during the day. And then at night, before going to sleep, to review it, to review what you did right from the beginning of the morning. And one of the calls that you and John, I remember you were talking, came out a lot about appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Any win, even a little small baby step that you took, yes, celebrate it.
And totally.
Depending on your type of spiritual persuasion, you can say, thank you, God. Thank you, universe. Thank you, mom. Thank you, whoever. But man, this is so cool. And then to also acknowledge the screw up, or maybe it was a small mistake, maybe an error in judgment, whatever it was, but to just own it, embrace it, identify it, take responsibility for it, and give yourself permission. How I do it, I say to myself, I give myself permission not to be perfect.
Mm.
I forgive myself. Man, this really was unacceptable if it was that bad. Hopefully not too often. But
right. Well, that's fascinating how sometimes we get that reversed, which is we kind of brush aside our achievements and then really focus on the screw-ups. I don't know what that inclination is, what that human instinct is, but sometimes we'll downplay our successes, which is such a strange self-sabotaging thing to do, but it's a lot of people's human nature.
Yeah, well, it's part of the way we're wired in the brain.
Right.
The brain is wired for survival and security, so we're always looking for problems and to avoid them. But the other thing is we've all been programmed to be humble. What are you, bragging?
Sure. You know?
By the way, after I did Lifebook in 2011, I'm really a teacher at heart, and although this is what I do and it's my career, it's not a big business, if you hear what I'm saying. I've never aspired to that, which... I mean, don't get me wrong, we do okay and we're fine. But I remember after I did Lifebook and I started working, you know, in all the categories and my life vision, my business soared, the business side of what I do, an opportunity approach soared through the roof. And my income for the first time was multiple six figures, which I had never done before in my career in all the prior decades. You know, with that. So it was really, so I'm telling some people, sharing this, and somebody said, oh, you're bragging? And it's interesting that culturally, and I wasn't, I was happy, I was thrilled, and I was also plugging, you know, recommending Lifebook to them that this is a good compliment to what we know in Silva. And I'm not going to mention names, but it was somebody in a leadership position, and it was like, oh boy, that's a quick way to shut someone up.
Right.
So, to go back to your observation, I think that some of it has to do with that. But here's the clincher. Here's where you really become a badass, so to speak. When you identify the screw up, you want to, on your timeline, so to speak, in your imagination, go back mentally to when it actually happened. So a simple thing: if you were in a restaurant and you were unkind to the server. Generally speaking, to reframe it, and that is accept it, acknowledge it, man, that was not nice, that's unacceptable, I was so impatient with the server, and then redo it, change it, like watching a movie, like being a movie director, for creatives, it's easy, just change it, shift it, and reimagine it the way you would have wanted it to be.
That's fascinating.
Well, I'll tell you, you got my number. You can look me up. I will absolutely stand by, guarantee it. People, when they apply that, the goals in the morning, visualize some positive outcomes, and then at night, celebrate the successes, feel great about it, and acknowledge any setbacks or difficulties, on a daily basis, you'll see substantial shifts.
Yeah, I love that. I love those tools. 'Cause you need tools in that situation, you know, when you're being... when you're being overcome with emotions and you're in that conflict, you need tools. And that's what I like about, you know, some of this personal development stuff provides you with those tools. Let's talk about before you're on set with those emotions. Are there any proactive actions that you can take to experience less inner conflict and more peace and clarity? I like the visualizing and the recapping. That sounds like a good proactive way. Any other ways like that?
Sure. I highly recommend any form of meditation, you know, with that, or reflection, just quieting. Or I love music, by the way, and it's very much a part, it's always on in my office, in the house, or in the car. And I use music to influence my state, depending where, you know, what I want to be in. And it's amazing. I mean, everything from jazz to classical music to, believe it or not, heavy metal, you know, classic rock.
If you need to like get that amped up, then you you turn on the harder stuff. But if you need to be more creative and peaceful, maybe you go for the classical.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. Or, well, for example, Allman Brothers, Southern Rock, in San Francisco, what they call San Francisco Rock. This really speaks to me because when I went to college, I kind of grew up on it with, you know, roommates. But some of that music is just so heartfelt, it's so genuine, and it was embracing the idea about change and about, I mean, in my opinion, that's what rock and roll originally stood for, was about making a difference, doing good, and not letting the stuff of life and the hypocrisy, you know, get in the way with that.
Mm-hmm.
But so something like that, feeling, or even a simple thing of sitting down and doodling. I'm on the phone waiting for customer service and doodling an appreciation. I appreciate. Thank you. You know, whatever it is, I appreciate that smile that my wife gave me this morning and the hug she gave me as she left the house.
Mm.
I appreciate that kind gesture, you know, when I was on the road that somebody let me cut in so I didn't get stuck in traffic. Simple things to big things. Every day, in the morning. In fact, I find I'm a meditator, short, like transition type meditation during the day. And I find myself, every time I'm doing it, just spending a minute or two thinking about anyone or anything I appreciate. I think another proactive thing is to get clear about our life vision and to make sure that our values are in alignment with our life vision or our actions, excuse me. And, you know, the big why. When I look back on this work that I do, you know, I love it. I get high as a kite when I do this and I facilitate a class, as I often tell people. In these nearly five decades, have there been upsets? Absolutely. Have there been real challenges? Absolutely. And what kept me going is just really staying connected with that life vision, why I do what I do and what's important. It helps you to tolerate the inevitable challenges.
It's absolutely true. It's a blueprint that you can refer back to and just gives you a little bit of grounding, you know?
Oh, big time. You know, people ask me, like, 47 years, how do you do this? I've outlasted in the organization family members. I've outlasted maybe half a dozen management levels. You know, people have been describing me as the constant or consistent. And I'm not special, by the way. I don't think I'm so unique. I mean, yeah, I'm special, of course, but you know what I mean. I just am so, maybe because I was so young in my life and the way things were, I just got so focused on this big why and this idea of what a cool thing to do, what an amazing thing to facilitate change, to facilitate transformation, and get paid for it.
Right.
You know, people are typically happy to see me because, you know, I've influenced them to make a better life somehow, some way.
And there's never been a better time for that. People are more interested. We're at a point in our lives and in our society where we have the opportunity to pursue things like this. This is not towards the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is much, much further towards the top. So we are very blessed to have programs like Lifebook and people like Ken Kostya in, you know, available today.
Today, it's so much easier. People are so much more open to this work. I mean, I love it. It's like, yes.
Totally.
So here's the question. Going back to this idea of conflict and this idea of managing it, is another takeaway I find very helpful. And I did not create these questions. I was working on remembering where I got it from. I mean, in the hundreds and hundreds of books that I've read and courses I've taken, So forgive me. If somebody knows who came up with them, I would love to know. They're very simple, straightforward. Number one, when you look at somebody, it could be in your relationship with your significant other, with your children. It could be, you know, with your team member, a coworker, a business partner, and so on and so on and so forth. Your boss. And we experience stuff with. So the first question is, can I change him or her?
So you're involved in conflict with this person, and the first thing you ask is, can I change them? What do you mean, change their mind or actually change them on a deeper level?
People have idiosyncrasies and are the way they are. Mm-hmm. So can I change them? Can I make them do this? Can I make them see my point of view? And I think the answer clearly is, do we even have a right to try to change somebody?
Mm.
You know, well, for example, take as Lifebook, for example. A man or a woman or whoever goes through Lifebook. They're thrilled. They connect with it. And they did it alone. So they run home and they tell their spouse about it or their children. Hey, you got to do this. And then they find, and they're not interested or they won't do it for whatever the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then we try to change them to get them involved, you know, and push them. So it could be something like that. Well, let me just go through all four, and I think it'll be clear.
Sure.
The second question is, can I help them? Can I help this person? And sometimes we can by virtue of by accepting them, by loving them, by being generous, by being available. Sure. But we can't do a blessed thing unless they say, "Please help."
Right.
You know, it's central, as we all know. The third question is, which is maybe the key question, I think all of us can relate to, is can I live with it?
Right.
Under these conditions, can I live with it? Can I stay true to myself? Can I stay in integrity? Can I maintain, you know, a focus on my life vision? They're simple questions, but that's not an easy one to deal with because part of it is embracing this person's idiosyncrasy. For example, if I may just speak generally, because to respect, privacy here?
Sure.
I was working in a situation where, although I'm the lead instructor and train director, working with somebody who had high influence, a visionary, idea, always moving forward. But the type of person not asking questions, not having a strategic plan, not doing a beta test or running it by, you know, some key people and so on,
mm-hmm.
jumping in
mm-hmm.
with that. And each time the person did this, it cost a lot of time and it cost a lot of money.
Mm.
And it was a huge mistake. And I'm not, again, just pointing out, I remember speaking up. You know, here's some red flags. I'm very good at that and discerning that for some reason and not listening. And I said, okay, you're the boss. You know, you're calling the shot. How can I support it? How can I help?
Mm-hmm.
And each time it cost me lots of money and time, you know, for that. And it was really starting to get to me and wear at me emotionally. So one of the things I started working on was embracing that this person's idiosyncrasies. And then the question was, what can I do for me so that I stay in integrity? And I had to make some changes and some adjustments. And for some people, it might mean leaving a career, leaving a company they're working with, or not working with a partner anymore, you know, selling the business or whatever it might be, or recognizing, whether it be our spouse or whoever, that this is the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I do? The fourth question is, what can I change about me? Is there anything I can do within myself to make this work
mm-hmm.
so that it's a win-win?
And that's the powerful one. The two quickest roads to resolution, to me, it seems, are personal, either personally accepting or personally making a change within yourself. It can be very challenging to change another person in any number of ways. But if you can just change yourself and get to a resolution, then That's a pretty easy, straightforward path forward, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I can say this because it's about myself. In my relationship, I've been with the same woman, who's my wife now for this August, 40 years.
Wow.
And we met at Boston University. We've been together even longer since September of 72.
Wow.
With that. And clearly, people who know us, I'm into this stuff heart and soul. I want to, you know, go meditate. I want to go study with Joe Dispenza. I want to go, you know, although she did do Life Book with me. We did it together and it really helped us a lot in our relationship. But she doesn't share the same passion all the time.
Sure.
Or the same interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I admit, you know, some time ago, earlier, it was bothering me. You know, and I was almost blaming. Well, if, you know, she would do this with me, it would be so much more meaningful. We'd have fun. And I finally had to, you know, give that up and recognize she's my best friend. She's the person I can count on more than anything else. She's the person I love, the mother of my three children, an outstanding, incredible mom, and so on and so forth. So appreciate that rather than focusing on those things that, you know, you're trying to change or that mm-hmm. you want to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And embracing that she doesn't share some of the same interests, and that's okay.
Totally.
Yeah, I know that, and I'm, you know, we all know that, but I'm admitting I put myself through some emotional turmoil, kind of blaming and pointing the finger. Well, I'd be happier if only she would change, and our lives would be so much better if only. And we all know that's ineffective. So it's mm-hmm. really about what can I do for me, you know, to do. But I would also say that sometimes we get to a point in our lives that I can't live with this. This is taking me off course, or this is really just pulling me out of integrity, or just, or it's unacceptable behavior, or it's not right. I mean, the slogan I'm working on living by more and more is to do good, make a difference, and have fun.
Mm. I love it. That's a good mantra to live by.
Yeah, it is my mantra.
I love it. Before we sign off, is there any other advice you'd like to give to Lifebook members who are looking to create ease and or empowerment when it comes to their emotional lives?
I would say continue to study, continue to ask for help, continue to, you know, we become who we spend, as we all know, we become just like the people we spend most of our time with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is a common problem across the board, that people do things like the Silver Method or Lifebook or whatever it is they do, but they don't have a community. They don't have a supportive community or an accountability partner. And that's something, the accountability partner aspect, that I really resonate with, that kind of hit me when I did Lifebook, the importance and the value of that, because we all need support.
Mm-hmm.
We all need people who are going to cheer us on and say, yes, even though they may not understand it, even though they may not be engaged with it, but they're going to be there and say, I believe in you,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the naysayers, mm-hmm. the haters,
mm-hmm.
with that. My little mantra, do good, make a difference, have fun. If we live by that, it's surprising some of the things that we move away from.
Right. A lot of stuff falls into place.
And I would also say, you know, this is really, you know, for Lifebook VIPs, but man, I would love to work with people who work with Lifebook in the Silver. I do them in Chicago, Boston, or Connecticut. Because it's a step-by-step, and it's actually full of a lot of how to do it. And I use a lot of the Silver tools to help me working on the categories.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let's talk about your products and some of the projects that you work with. The Silver Method, and I saw, what was that, Intuition Academy. I like the sound of that. Talk to me and the listeners a little bit about your products and your projects and where you can send them.
Well, first I would say that, to be clear, I'm open to a lot of things, and I work with a lot of modalities. I believe I was born to do it when I was introduced to the Silver Method. It's a step-by-step system with a very strong framework in how to take command of your life by understanding and developing tools for the mind-body-spirit connection. So it employs dynamic meditation, which means it's both active and passive. You can get into a state and then creatively visualize and do, you know, reframe and do work. And literally now I can honestly say from neuroscience, We're rewiring the brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that. And that's a 4-day program. And that's something that I do, you know, regularly with that. I didn't develop it. I just happened to start it at an early part in my life. Jose Silva did it. We're a 52-year-old brand, started in 66. That's one.
But and what's a URL for people to visit for that?
Silva, S-I-L-V-A, method, M-E-T-H-O-D, C as in Charlie, T, .com. Silva Method, CT, that's the abbreviation for Connecticut. Or if they just Google Silva Method Chicago, Silva Method Connecticut, Silva Method Boston, it'll come up. And I've got some videos on there. My website probably has far more pages, I'm told, than it should have. But I did it purposely because I believe in people. Now, there's a factor of readiness doing stuff like this. And I find that the more people know about it, the more they get out of it when they come through. Because instead of saying, oh, really? You know, they come in and say, come on, tell me how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
The other thing with, you know, my product, it's funny, it's interesting. Based on some conversations I had with others and with John, as in John Butcher, and some opportunities, that's me branding myself,
mm-hmm.
which has become important.
I mean, right.
As Ken Caution. So I have something called the Trust Your Intuition Academy. It's my foray into exploring online programs that I hope will never replace our live interaction together in training, but that gives people support, that gives people further tools, that gives people an inexpensive time and or even money introduction.
Right.
You know, in this instance to myself and to the work. So it's real simple. TrustYourIntuitionAcademy.com, and I've got some dynamic meditation that are my own intellectual property that I've created. And I've taken around the world with me. I've got a mini workshop on intuition. It's kind of a fun and game. One of my specialties is helping people awaken and develop and refine their intuition. And I'm in the process, and I do master classes with my students. So I'm in the process of creating some other products, as I call them, so that people can have 24/7 access to something that would support or inspire and give them how to do it kind of takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got, as time allows, I've got a list of other programs to get up there. Just need to get a few more days in the week.
Right.
to get them up there. But yeah, thank you for asking. And I would say to fellow VIPs, I really, although, you know, we're online and we have websites, we have email, I really enjoy speaking with people. So I'm very open to it. People want to give a call, they have questions or something like that. People are often surprised because, you know, they can register online for Silva classes. I love it when they call and ask me to register them on the phone because then I get a chance to chat with them, answer questions, see where they're at and kind of get into their head so that when they come into the class, I can customize it and make sure that I'm mm-hmm. clarifying from right. their point of view how they can use it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good strategy. So check out Silva Method, Trust Your Intuition Academy. Is that what it was?
TrustYourIntuitionAcademy.com.
Fantastic.
And Silva Method CT or Silva Method of Connecticut.com.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, Ken, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Are you kidding? Thank you for having me. I love doing this. It's, you know, these days, I'm just too often in front of the computer looking at marketing, and I'd much rather talk like we've been talking.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
Sure thing. Awesome. All right, all you Lifebook listeners, I'll see you next time on the Lifebook VIP podcast.